Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. And, hey, everyone, how is everybody doing? It is 12:15 a.m. Thursday or late Wednesday, however you want to look at it. I just got off of work, came home about maybe almost an hour ago, and it has been a rough work week for me, and it's actually my last week or so on the job. And let me talk about that for a little bit. First of all, I hope everybody is planning for the holidays and getting ready for a nice Christmas. I'm going to be continuing to do shows. In fact, I'll have a lot of time off in the next week or so, even if I was still going to be working because the plant shuts down over Christmas. So I would have had all of, not next week, but the week after off to begin with. Not necessarily by choice, of course, but again, the plant closed down. Now I'm getting let go. Partly because of attendance, although they were going to lay me off anyway, and I'm kind of having a fight with them right now about that sort of thing. And where I work, they have what they call a point system, where if you miss a day that's unexcused, you're given a point, and you're allowed 8 points over the course of a year. And you're also allowed, you have sick days, you have doctor's visits and all that stuff, and that's fine. Now, over the last year or so, both myself and my wife have had a lot of medical issues that we've had to deal with. And there were times when I had to take a day off, and probably like 3 or 4 days that I've had to take off just to stay home and be with my wife, who was occasionally in a lot of pain, kind of like she is now, although she's not so bad now. She sleeps mostly. And she's basically waiting on her operation. And once she gets her operation done, then everything hopefully will be more settled in. I'm going to have to take some time to be with her then, hopefully not too long, because hopefully she'll get better quickly. She's strong. She's a strong person. Much stronger than she cares to admit. But she's in a lot of pain right now, and she has been pretty much for the most part of the last year. But at any rate, I had a little my throat surgery done. I think I mentioned that a few shows ago. And unfortunately, because I had used up my doctor's leave and my sick leave, they decided not to count that, and I was issued 2 additional points that I probably shouldn't have, and that put me over the limit. So they were looking to let me go. Now, I should have gotten let go on Friday, December 10th, but the union fought hard to make sure that they didn't let, because I was one of several people that were in what they say point trouble or attendance problems, that they were going to let go. But the union people said, let's not just let these people go just before Christmas. That's not right. Let them stay on at least till the end of the year. And that's going to happen one way or the other. I mean, I'm going to get let go. But the union understands that what my situation is. And I told them that the deal is with myself and my wife, and how, you know, I was not abusing the system. You know, the point system at the plant used to be much, much higher. They used to give you 12 points, and then they revert to zero at the end of the at the beginning of the year. But now they dropped it down to 8 points, and if you use up a point, you have to wait an entire year to get that point back, which I think is rather ridiculous, but there's no point in arguing about it because they're not going to change the system anytime soon. In fact, it's gotten worse because they know they're going to lay people off, and they're looking for reasons to get rid of people before they have to do that so they can lay as few people off as possible. But at any rate, I have been fighting with the company. Actually, the union has been fighting on my behalf to try to get them to change my status from being let go to being laid off. And like I said, look, I knew I was going to lose the job anyway. I never expected to make a career out of this. Because, you know, when I first got there and I was working on the paint line, I told my guy Dave, my coworker Dave, I said, man, if I'm still doing this 5 years from now, shoot me. You know, there's got to be better things in life. I mean, it's nice having a job, and I understand that there's a lot of people there that really need the work, and it's nice to have work. But you know what? The job is driving me up the friggin' wall. I'll talk about that more in a second. But as it stands right now, at the beginning of the year, I will not have a job. But if I get laid off, then at least I don't have to worry about collecting unemployment. And if they lay me off, then I can continue my medical benefits for a short time, at least until I find something else. And hopefully I'll be able to find something else soon. My friend Dave Merrill suggested that I go down to a radio station, a kind of an independent leftist radio station located near downtown Atlanta. And just intern there for a while, hoping to get some sort of radio gig in the future. And maybe I'll do that. I don't know what my options are. In fact, Mike Malloy was at a get-together, Democratic get-together tonight, which I couldn't go to because I had to work. If I had like a vacation day, I probably would have taken it today just for that. But at any rate, it's not looking particularly good. I don't know how easy it's going to be for me to find work again. It was almost 11 months for me to find work the last time, and I'm already behind on the rent. Things are really fucking bad. And I was trying to figure out, you know, how I got so far behind in the rent, because I'm not even close. And thankfully, I have a landlord that's willing to work with us on that. But, you know, his patience is not without limits. And I was trying to figure out, you know, where all that money went from that should have gone to him for rent. And some of it went from just missed days of work because of, you know, me trying to take care of my health issues and trying to take care of my wife, because I had to take a lot. It's probably about $1,500 right there, $1,500, $1,600. And it was about $1,500, $1,600 of extra expenses that I incurred that I was not expecting, about $700 to get the car fixed up for emission standards. We have emission standards tests here in Georgia. I'm sure they have them in pretty much all states. And to also get some other stuff. And that cost, you know, altogether about $700 when you also include the new registration. I had to pay the IRS $500. And, of course, there was a $600 for the car in and of itself, which if I'd had a car or whatever, would have gone towards the rent. So, you know, with those combined, that's where all that money went. We're talking about yeah, that stupid ticket. That's right. My wife just reminded me. I think I mentioned this on an earlier show too. I had a $162 ridiculous speeding ticket from the DeKalb County Police, and that really pissed me off. But you know, and it's been a real struggle. And if I lose the job and get unemployment, it's just going to be harder for me to get caught up. Although I'll be able to pay the guy something. In fact, this will be the first week I'll be able to give him a check and have for a while. I'm going to give him a check for $150, and you know, I'm just going to keep giving him money whenever I can afford to do so. He's been very lenient about that, and the reason why he has this basement apartment is for people like myself and my wife who are in financial trouble to help us get out. But we've been here for a year now. And again, I'm not sure how long his patience. Of course, we've got nowhere to go. If he kicks us out, that's it. It's homeless shelters for us because we got no place to go. We won't even have enough money to put stuff in storage. You know, it's that friggin' bad. But that's all right. You know, could be worse. Could be raining. My wife's laughing at that. That's from Young Frankenstein that was on. At any rate, and you know, the pressure's starting to get to me. I'm getting a little stressed out. My wife is noticing it, and it's making her more depressed. And she doesn't need to be more depressed because she's already dealing with her own sicknesses and doesn't need to be screwed up by my little affairs. And I'm starting to snap at people again. And, you know, I've got a short enough fuse as it is, and all the stress is just making it worse. And over at work, it's been real pain in the ass. But, you know, a lot of the problems, and I'll talk about what happened the other day and what started to happen today and didn't happen, fortunately. We were working on, they moved us over to line 4, which I mentioned before, is a line I don't particularly like because it's a line that never stops. It just keeps on going. It's unlike the line 5 where I currently work, which moves for a time and then stops for a time for you to do the stuff, then moves and then stops, moves and then stops. That's a pain in the ass and enough. But line 4 doesn't stop at all. It just keeps on going. And they had me at the far end, just the last one before the person puts, you know, grabs the stuff and packs it up. Basically, in this case, the parts that we're building are internal parts to go in a bigger box, and it basically gets thrown into a big basket. At any rate, it's too complicated to explain. Just trust me on that. What my job was at the far end was to grab a circuit breaker, put it on the thing, and put in 5 screws that use 2 different screwdrivers, by the way. One set of 2 screws and another set of 3 screws that are different screwdrivers. And I'm supposed to do all that while the line is moving. And I'm like, you know, you really need somebody to put these first 2 screws in, or at least put the circuit breaker on there. And they're like, well, you know, the day shift people, you know, they do this whole thing. And I said, well, I suppose a day shift person can do the whole line by themselves, right? Just do the whole thing from start to finish. Oh, yeah, right. So, you know, they decide, well, you know, we'll just move you somewhere else. And they move you down to another spot. And sure enough, as I'm working down the spot and I'm looking down the line, sure enough, they've got somebody putting the circuit breaker on for somebody. And it's like, you know, if they would have done that for me, I wouldn't have had any friggin' problem. You know, if they would have just done that. Because the guy who was behind me, all he had to do was put in 1 part and 2 screws. Surely he could have reached over and grabbed a circuit breaker and laid it in there. And these are big circuit breakers. I got little hands. I'm a little guy. For those of you who have never met me, and pretty much none of you have ever actually met me in person, I'm a little guy, and I've got little hands. So I really, you know, have a little trouble grabbing these really, really big, heavy circuit breakers. I mean, I can do it with one hand, but it's just barely enough for my grip. And it just kind of pisses me off. You know, so here I am. If I say something about it, well, we'll just move you. But if somebody else says something, then they'll do what they can to help them out. God knows nobody helps Joe out, you know. But if somebody needs Joe's help, you know, Joe's got to give it, because if Joe doesn't help out, then you know, he looks bad too. And it just gets to the point where I'm even afraid to ask for parts that I need. In fact, when I was working in that new area yesterday where I was at, I ran out of the things that I was putting in, you know, just inserting a couple of things. It's, again, too lengthy to explain. I'm not going to bother. But I ran out, so I went back behind the line to put parts in, and the assembler A, who is the person who is, you know, supposed to be keeping an eye on that stuff, whose job it is to make sure that I stay well supplied, you know, she comes up to me and says, well, that's my job. You're doing that. I said, well, you know, you look busy, so I'm just taking care of it right now. Well, you shouldn't be leaving the line. I said, well, you know, whatever. You know, if I say something, then you think I'm whining. I mean, I didn't say this to her, but, you know, if I say something, then I'm either whining or I'm lazy. And this morning we come back and we're working on line 5 like we normally do, because, again, line 4 was not our usual line. And actually, by near lunch break, they pulled me over to do something completely different, which was a job that I like much more, because you get to relax and be a little bit more self-paced about it. But anyway, we were back on line 5 today, and I was closer to the beginning, which is where I usually am. And I had to put 1 piece in and 2 screws. And there's a piece of insulation that goes on before that that needs to get basically taped in. And they use a date code thing. It's like a little price sticker thing. And, the A tells me that I got to put the thing in and then put the thing in, the other thing in, and screw it in. And I'm like, okay. You know, and then the lady next to me, who they moved over, who they switched me with on line 4 yesterday, she says, you know, one person can't do all that. You know, you got to have somebody in there that puts that insulation in and tapes it down. You know, and I told her, I said, well, you know, I bet you they got somebody on day shift who can do it, right? And she says, no, 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 nobody on day shift does it. You know, and so they had to get somebody from another section to do it because we're shorthanded as it is. And they're going to be even more shorthanded next week when I'm gone. So they find somebody from another – they get somebody from another section and they bring it there and they bring them there and he puts that stuff in. But, you know, if that woman hadn't said anything, I would have been stuck putting that shit in because if I would have said something about it, if I would have said anything about it, then, you know, they would have just moved me over. And, of course, eventually they would have found out that one person really can't do that, and then they would have found the help. But I would have still made something look bad because I whined about it and I said something about it. And then when I ran out of screws, I had to go and get screws. And, again, the A gets on my case about leaving the line. I said, well, you know, you were nowhere to be seen. Well, actually, she was right there, standing there next to me, but she was too busy talking about her colored contacts to notice that I was running out of parts. And, of course, it's her job to be paying attention to this shit and not to be sitting there gossiping about her colored contact lenses or selling her Avon products or talking to people about Avon products they want to buy, whatever. Hell, going around with an Avon catalog looking at stuff when, in the meantime, I'm running out of parts and other people need stuff, you know. If I was the A, I wouldn't be sitting there doing that. I'd be doing my damn job and make sure people had enough. And if I say something about it, I'm either a whiner or I'm lazy or I'm stupid. You know, we'll put somebody on the line who won't run out of parts, you know. And I'm, you know, because of all the other stress that I'm under, with all the other things going on, I'm just like, you know, I don't even want to talk to you. There's no point in saying anything because you don't listen to me. And that is the point of this entire fucking thing, this entire piece, that I finally get to my point. Nobody fucking listens to Joe. Nobody listens to me. Am I stupid? Do I have a big sign on me that says I'm stupid? That my opinion means nothing? That what I do has no meaning because I'm stupid? Do I have a big fucking sign on me that says that? You know? If I tell you that there is too many things going on for one lie, for one person to do, you ought to say, oh, you're right, there's too many things. Not, well, a person from the first shift can do it. Well, get yourself a fucking person from the first shift to do it. Do I look like a fucking robot to you? No, I'm lazy, you're stupid. And it's not just at work, it's anywhere. Nobody fucking listens to me. I tell people Kerry's not going to get in. You know, there's no way Kerry's going to get in. And, oh, no, Kerry's going to win in a landslide. You can't be talking negative like that. Nobody fucking listens to me. Again, do I look stupid? Maybe you're trying to, you know, maybe you've got a little bit of denial of your own. But you know what? Don't lay that shit on me. I write some very nice little diaries on Coast, and I barely get a reply. You know, and then somebody else writes some bullshit stuff. You know, I see some of the diaries that get recommended. I'm like, what the hell is this shit? It's bullshit. But God knows no one listens to Joe. It's annoying and it's frustrating. Okay, granted, I grant you that I haven't done a whole hell of a lot in my life to really give people the idea that maybe they should listen to me. I mean, I'm not incredibly wealthy. I've always got money problems. I don't always make the best decisions in the world, but you know what? I'm still not fucking stupid. If something's right there in front of my face and I point it out, you know, hey, there's a ridge there. Don't drive over it. And then when you drive over it and you say, well, you don't fucking listen to me. Well, you fucking say something. I did say something. You don't fucking listen to me. God damn it. Joe knows. I may not be the fucking man like Sean Kennedy, but Joe fucking knows. Joe is not stupid. Joe is capable of reasoning things out. Joe has more than 3 active brain cells, ladies and gentlemen. I may not be Albert fucking Einstein. Maybe I am stupid. Albert Einstein. I may not be Albert fucking Einstein, but I am not stupid. Listen to me. If I say that there's too much shit for one person on the line to be doing, I'm not saying that to be lazy. I'm saying it because there's too much shit for one person to be doing in that section. Why do people have a problem with this? If anybody is stupid, it's the people who are sitting there talking about bullshit when there's work to be done. As I've said time and time again, I don't take my job seriously. I take my work seriously. That these people take their job seriously. They take it more seriously than I do because they're the ones who sit there and say, well, you would do anything to keep your job. You know something? Some jobs aren't fucking worth keeping. And especially nowadays, when a job doesn't pay you enough, or barely pays you enough to get by. Nobody fucking listens to me. Everything I say is an excuse. Oh, that's just an excuse. You're just saying that because you don't want to do anything. No, I'm saying it because it's not going to fucking work. If I think it'll work, I'll give it a try. You know, I look at some people, and we really had a good time talking to Sean Kennedy last week because he's a real, you know, he's a real interesting radio personality. I don't always agree with him because I didn't want to say anything to him, but you know, I do think a plane hit the Pentagon, and quite frankly, to me, that bit of information is less important than the fact that, you know, that they were just going to use anything like that as an excuse to go to war anyway. I mean, I know about Operation Northwoods and shit like that. There are people in this country who are perfectly willing to commit acts of terror within this country and kill Americans so that they can get shit they want done. And don't sit there and tell me there aren't, because there are, there have been, there always have been, and there always will be. There are some pretty fucked up minds out there, and there are some of them are pretty powerful fucking people. Okay? You know, John Kennedy said, no one believes that. Well, you know, I don't necessarily believe a plane hit it, but to me, it's kind of irrelevant to the greater overall picture. But at any rate, the point I'm trying to make is that Sean Kennedy is a personality, and he's a type of person like Mike Malloy and like Randy Rhodes and like Al Franken that I'm sure people want to talk to. You know, they'll call up and they'll want to talk to them. They're happy to see them. And that doesn't happen with me. So why I do a radio show is fucking beyond me. Because really, you know, nobody calls me. Hardly anybody emails me. Every now and then I get a nice email. I got a nice email from one of my regular guys. A guy also by the name of Joe. I won't say his last name. He does some really cool stuff. He plays the Cup of Joe show on his server from time to time. And that's good. But nobody emails Joe just to say hi. Or nobody says, hey, Joe, check this out. Nobody does that. It just doesn't happen. Because I'm a radio person, but I'm not a radio personality. I'm not that interesting a person that people want to call me and get to know me. But you know something? Listen to me. I'm speaking the truth as best as I can. I see things from a different perspective than a lot of other people do. I'm not always right. I'm not sitting here telling you that everything I tell you is the absolute truth. It's the truth as I see it. You know, the big radio personalities, the real egos, will sit there and tell you that everything that they say is absolutely true. What I say about the workplace is for the most part true because, you know, I'm telling you what my experiences are. And I'm pretty sure that my experiences are not very different from everybody else's experiences. The workplace is a piece of shit right now, ladies and gentlemen. I know it and you know it. Nobody listens to me. Sam listens to me. Play us out, Sam.
We'll be right back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
The national anthem of this country, the Star Spangled Banner, is going to have to be rewritten very soon. Nobody sings it on the way to work anymore. Remember the good old days? You'd pass a guy going to work. Oh, say, can you see? Hello, Dr. Brown. They don't do that. What's the fair way to rewrite this kind of a song? By the way, you people here, you really can't see during this bit, can you? Because the piano. Those are the goon seats. You'll find a picture and a resume under the seat. Read along. Let me update it. Put down riding and swimming, okay? What's the fair way to rewrite a song like that, a national song? Do you hire the country's most popular songwriter, what, Burt Bacharach? Let him do it? That's not fair. No, why? Let one hire a professional? You wouldn't want that song anyway. Hey, no place. It's got trees, it's got mountains. I think the fair way to rewrite the song is to hold open auditions. Put a piano, put a good piano, let everyone sound good, in a building in Washington, get a panel of judges, and hold auditions for the new national anthem. So let's go to Washington to those auditions now. Not literally, of course. I meant comedically. Listen, I said last night I said that, and 30 people went out in the alley and waited for, like, a bus to take them. And, of course, there was no bus there, and I felt like a fool. All right, please be quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of you. We got to get through it. Please be quiet. Very quickly, sit down at the piano, state your name, where you're from, play your song, all right? Don't give us any titles. Please be quiet. Don't give us any titles. We'll call them all the anthem. If we like it, we'll get your title from you later, okay? State your name, where you're from, play your song. We'll stop you when we've heard enough. Let's go quickly. You're first.
First? Ted Rutherford? Dallas, Texas. Ghetto you choose. You jail all your black.
Thank you. Hal Carter. I lived the last 75 years in Michigan. I was born there. I'm 75 years old.
While we stand here waiting for the ball game to start, let's give thanks for our home and our two-car garage. Let's give thanks for TV.
Thank you. Let's give thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Stand over there, kids. All right. All right. Hi. I'm Lee, and the kids here to my left are the Anthemites. And we're from Sarasota, Florida. Ready?
Ooh, I like the USA. Ooh, ooh.
I like the USA. Ooh. It's better than Russia or China. Ooh, it's better than Yugoslavia. Thank you. Thank you.
Can the lights be changed at all? All right, it's not important. Before I sing my song, I should tell you a bit about myself. My name is Mr. Robert Bob Harmon, and I currently live and work in the very exciting city of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm an entertainer. And you know, Vegas is a great place, an exciting place, but originally I'm from a much quieter place, a place up north, out west, a place I call Portland. What a great place it is. In one 30-square-mile radius, there's more to do than almost anywhere in the world. There's hunting and fishing and boating and camping. Get on with it! I am. It's how I get into it in the actor. It's got beautiful waterfalls and gorgeous trees, but you know, it's part of a bigger place. It's part of a country. Can you guess which country it is? No, it's not Denmark or Poland or Sweden or Rome. Get on with it! It's a lovely place I call home, I'm proud to say. I've got a country. Got a country. I spell it A-M-E-R-I-C-A. Get off the stage! Thank you. Thank you.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's V like in victory. That was Albert Brooks rewriting the national anthem. Albert Brooks is one of the best filmmakers you'll ever come across, comedic filmmakers. I haven't heard much of his stand-up comedy, but I pick up a lot of shit off the internet, and I thought I'd share that one with you. I was going to play some Christmas music, but I'll save that till next week. Some of the songs that I like for Christmas that my wife absolutely hates, because I don't really like any of the traditional stuff. And the one, actually, I don't know the name of the song. There's one song that I really do like, but it got, I don't want to say it got ruined, but I keep thinking of an old Saturday Night Live sketch. And I think it's like Christmas Bells or something. Ring Christmas Bells. But all I can think of is that Saturday Night Live sketch where the guy, where they were doing like a dysfunctional family Christmas. Like, leave me alone. Just get away. I'm doing fine. Because I feel that way. You know, I fucking feel that way. God almighty, it's been a rough year, and it's been a rough end of the year. So, you know, leave me alone, just get away, I'm doing fine. Well, of course you're not, honey. My honey's, oh, you're not. Well, of course we're not. That's the idea. It's, you know, yeah, leave me alone, I'm fine, I'm fine. Of course you're not fine. You're looking for attention. You know what we need? Because I think I'm not the only person who's like this. I mean, I'm stressed out. And I'm sure a lot of you are stressed out, too. I mean, the holiday season does tend to stress people out. And, you know, more people commit suicide during the holiday season than during any other time of year. Did you know that, honey? You know, she knows. She knows that. And it's because, you know, everybody's trying to, you know, supposed to be all happy and stuff like that. You know, but if things aren't going well for you, it just makes things that much worse to see everybody being happy. And as crappy as things are, I'm glad I have my wife with me, though, because, you know, I love her, and she loves me, and we could be living in a refrigerator box, and it would be okay. Well, it wouldn't be okay, but could be raining. But, you know, like I was saying, so many of us are kind of stressed out, and what we kind of need is something to get together. Now, some of you don't know this. Some of you do. My nemesis, Beachon, certainly knows this because he's attended these things and, in fact, been a major guest to them. But before I began, before I was a blogger, I was a guy who helped organize conventions. I helped found and was one of the primary directors, not the top guy, but one of the three top guys for Anime Week in Atlanta, one of the most successful Japanese animation conventions in the country. Very successful, very popular, did very well. And I'm not going to take credit and say I am like totally responsible for it, but I really did help out and stuff like that in, you know, a big way, not just like as a regular staff member. No, I was one of the big guys for that. So I have a lot of experience in dealing with hotels, and I know what goes into putting a convention on. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I get so frustrated at work is because I know I'm such a good organizer, and I'm very good at putting these things together. But I very rarely get the chance to at a place like work because, as I've said so many times, so often it has nothing to do with the work, but it has to do with the politics or, you know, it's just the difference between the work and the job, if you know what I mean. But I thought that why don't I get together and I'm hopefully can find some local people for staff. And if you live in the Atlanta area and you want to help out, email me and I'll give that address again a little later. JOEVEC@bellsouth.net. I'll give it again later on. But I would like to put together a convention basically for left-wing bloggers. And I put a post up on the blog, and if you listen to the show, the odds are you read the blog. But, you know, I've got a lot of people who listen to the show who don't read the blog, and I've got a lot of people who read the blog who never listen to the show. What do I fucking know? At any rate, I was going to call this thing Blogapalooza, but I think we would probably get sued for that. I'm really not sure if you can get sued for because, you know, Lollapalooza is a big rock thing. And I thought Blogapalooza would be cool. It would certainly attract attention, but I think we would probably get sued for that. If anybody knows anything about that, let me know, because that would be, you know, I would really love to call it Blogapalooza as opposed to what I am going to call it currently, which is Blogfest. And I found out, actually, there is a blogfest.com, but they haven't updated anything since friggin' 2003, and it was supposed to be some place out in Oregon or something like that. But that's the working title for it right now. The subtext of the convention, you know, whatever secondary title it's going to have, is going to make it sure that it's primarily for lefty bloggers. So, you know, if we have righty bloggers who can act like rational human beings, they'll be welcome to. And, of course, anybody is welcome to attend the show. It's going to be open to the general public. There will be an admission fee, like there is with all conventions. You got to pay for it, you know. Anyway, what I'm going to tell you is going to be basically a rough draft of what's called an executive summary. What I'm doing is I'm writing a business plan, and hopefully I can attract some people who will want to help invest in it, send some feed money. They'll have to be angel investors. It's not the type of deal that you should be expecting a return on, at least not right away. If a show is successful, it can be profitable, but it takes a couple of years for that to happen. And I'm not planning on doing the first one until spring of 2006. Why that long is because it takes a while for these things to get set up. And by spring of 2006, you know, we'll have all the stuff organized. And I realize it seems like it's a long way in advance, but, you know, things go by very quickly. It seems like only yesterday when I was sitting in the house I used to live in when I first heard word about 9/11. So time can go by a lot quicker than you think. But it'll be held here in Atlanta, mainly because it's a good city for conventions. They've got a lot of great hotels. And, of course, the fact that I live here makes it even more important for me to hold it here. Isn't that a coincidence that the city I happen to live in happens to be such a good place for a convention? But at any rate, and I do have some experience, and I know where I can get at least some help with hotels if I need that. But basically, my premise is this, that bloggers are a very diverse group of people who are only now beginning to understand who they are and how they're influencing the world around them. But really, you know, really do we get to see the people behind the blogs. On the rare occasions that they detach themselves from their keyboards and thrust themselves into the public eye in one way, shape, or form, They're usually doing some sort of official blog or politically related business and don't have the time to meet and greet their fellow bloggers. And therefore, Blogfest is designed as a place for left-wing bloggers to get together, meet their peers in a casual social environment for the purpose of having some fun. Get the stress out. Because, you know, politics can be very, very stressful if you're active. And especially if you're a Democrat these days, because we're getting our asses kicked left and right. The important thing to notice, to note about Blogfest is that nothing official is going to occur there. Yes, I do expect some networking to go on, and I think that's an important thing and a good thing. And of course, there are going to be people plugging an idea or trying to sell a book or maybe some T-shirts or something like that, and that's fine too. But there's not going to be any heads of organizations that are going to be chosen. There's not going to be any official policy decisions made. Now, the Blogfest will take place over the course of 3 days, Friday through Sunday, and it'll have panels and events featuring celebrity guests, that is, noteworthy bloggers or other important figures of the left. And I know a few people to contact, and if I get a couple of big names, and I think you know who I'm talking about, then that will certainly help. I'm going to hold it in the spring because it won't really interfere with any actual important political events that are going on. Nothing truly significant is going to be taking place in the spring of 2006, as far as I know. And again, it'll be in Atlanta because of the excellent hotel availability and also because of Atlanta's centralized location. We're a really good place to get to, you know, a fairly easy place to get to, as far as the air is concerned. We'll have things like a dealer's room, where people can sell books, T-shirts, bumper stickers, other things, or it'll be a place for organizations where they can meet and recruit new people and let people know about, you know, what their organization are, plug their blogs or whatever. And I'm thinking that the highlight of the convention, now in anime conventions or in fan-run conventions like sci-fi conventions, the highlight is usually what? The costume contest. That's usually the big thing that's held on Saturday night. Well, obviously you can't really have a costume contest in a convention like this, but I thought we could probably have a nice awards banquet with categories to be determined. And, you know, the thing about it is it will be voted on by the attendees. It will not be voted on over the web because I want to make the point that it's important for people to actually come in and get together. It's important for people to come to the thing and get together and not just come there for the purpose of, you know, posting on your blog. I mean, it's kind of – I see people do this at fan conventions. They'll go there and they'll bring their computers and they'll sit there doing the same damn thing at home. You know, and they're doing it at a place where they paid money to go do it. No, no, no. Go out and meet people. Be social. You know? And there'll probably be some sort of dance. And I've got several names entitled just The Social. You know, maybe that could be like, we can even have different dances for older people, a dance for older people. That would be The Social. It would be a classier event in terms of how you dress and what type of music you're going to have. You can have a rave for the kids. You know, or some hip hop or whatever. You know, we could have a DJ or a live band. There's a couple of local bands that would probably be pretty good for that. Now, in time, the convention will support itself through admission sales and sales of booths for merchants and stuff like that. Especially if it gets large enough, because the cost of renting the hotel space is actually fairly nil if you rent a lot of hotel rooms. That's key there. So it'll actually be self-supporting. What I'm hoping to get is a little bit of seed money, and I'm hoping to get a big left-wing organization to sponsor it, to put up a little bit of front money. Not a lot. We're not talking a lot of money. We're not talking $50,000, $60,000 here. It could be done for very little. Mostly what we need to begin with is a down payment on a hotel. And what I would like to get is some money so I can get some guests and all that. And again, because of the type of guests that we're getting – with a science fiction thing, you know, the celebrities will be asking for, you know, serious money to come. And I think, you know, I can get people to come for a lot less money and basically just airfare and then a hotel room and a stipend for food and stuff like that should be sufficient to lure bloggers. But the important thing is to get people, you know, who are going to draw other people. So, oh, I want to meet this guy. Or, I want to meet this person, this girl, you know. So, you know, this could be a fairly important event, you know, for people on the left. I mean, every chance we get to meet and know each other, to network with other people or to get in touch with a political organization, it only makes the ties between us stronger. You know, it just a place to go and just let down our hair a little bit once a year and remind ourselves that we're more than just a bunch of faceless names typing to each other across the internet. And I mean, it's easy for me to sit here in a radio show, sit here by myself, basically is what I do, and I record my show in my room. Maybe I'll do a phone interview or I'll do an interview with somebody inside the house that I've done from time to time. You know, stuff happens. And but basically I do it by myself. I blog by myself. And everybody does. I mean, it's nice to read the comments and to get the comments, but everybody's just basically doing it for their home. Let's get out of that. Let's just get out for a weekend and have a good time. That's a cool thing. That's an important thing. And email me about that. And I put this on the blog. If you want to go on the blog, it's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. cupofjoe.blogspot.com. And get on there and leave a comment where it says Blogfest 2006. Or you can email me, joevec@bellsouth.net, especially if you live in the Atlanta area and want to be of help as far as staff is concerned, because we will need a few people locally to be staff-wise. A lot of this stuff can be done online. Oh, we're also going to be showing videos and stuff like that. I'm sure guys like Michael Moore will give permission to screen, you know, his previous films, Fahrenheit 9/11, Bowling for Columbine. Maybe in a few episodes of TV Nation that we can grab, because, you know, that was a great TV show. A lot of people have forgotten about that show, and which is a shame because I think it was one of the best shows that was ever on television. But also other videos, too, that other people have. I got some really cool videos just before the election from people who are looking to plug. And, of course, there are always going to be people plugging books and stuff like that. So it'll be a fun event, and that's the whole idea behind it, for it to be a fun event. And I hope that's a good idea. I hope you all like that. And I hope that we can get something going there along those lines. Let's take a break, and we'll be back for a few minutes. We're getting close to the end here. And then we'll talk about whatever the hell I'm going to talk about. I haven't figured that out yet. But we'll do that. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
All right, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupofjoe.blogspot.com, and email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Write me, leave a note on the blog, let me know how you're doing. And let me know what you think about what I'm writing on the blog and what I'm saying on the show. You know, I leave an open thread there every time. You can fucking write something. You can fucking write. You sit there all night. You can just sit there, you know. You sit there all night and you just read this and you listen to the show. No, you can fucking write. Put your fingers to the type. Even just write and say, fuck you, for Christ's sake. Just write. Let me know you're out there. Who the hell's listening to this show? Why am I doing this? Because I'm fucking insane. I'm sorry. I'm letting the tension get to me. I'm letting the pressure get to me. Speaking of which, came across an article in the New York Times about some of the stress that our soldiers are going to go through and when they come back from Iraq. And I want to read a little bit of it from you, because this is a perfect example of how Republicans hate soldiers. They talk about, you know, patriotism and love of country and all that, but when it actually comes down to it, when it comes down to brass tacks, they hate soldiers because they will put them in situations and lie to them about what they're doing. They'll take advantage of their patriotism. They'll take advantage of their loyalty, you know, and none of it is really helping the soldiers. They send them in there without armor. You know, if a Democrat were to do this shit, they'd never get away with it. There'd be howls of protest from the right. Oh, Democrats, you know, it's Republicans who hate the soldiers, ladies and gentlemen. Because only a Republican would send someone into combat without the sufficient protection they had. Just like if you go to work, only your right-wing boss would make you do a job and not give you adequate equipment and force you to go out and either buy it yourself or not give you enough and make you fight among your fellow workers for it. That's another favorite trick of bosses. They do that. They don't give you enough stuff to do what needs to be done. So everybody's got to fight over who gets to use what they need to get their damn job done. Either that or just force them to buy it themselves. This way the boss doesn't have to pay for it. You know, let's send them to war. Get all patriotic. Go kick their ass. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, you need armor and shit? Oh, that's another story. According to Stephen Robinson, who is a 20-year Army veteran who is now the executive director of the National Gulf War Research Center and Advocacy Group, he said there's a train coming that's packed with people who are going to need help for the next 35 years. He said he has a very strong sense that the mental health consequences are going to be the medical story of this war. Excuse me, that was said by Dr. Stephen Joseph, who served as assistant secretary of Defense for Health Affairs from 94 to 97 under Bill Clinton. Now, what was planned as a short and decisive intervention in Iraq has become a grueling counterinsurgency that has put American troops into sustained close-quarters combat on a scale not seen since the Vietnam War. Psychiatrists say the kind of fighting seen in the recent retaking of Fallujah, spooky urban settings with unlimited hiding places, the impossibility of telling friend from foe, the knowledge that every stretch of road may conceal an explosive device, is tailored to produce the adrenaline-gone haywire reactions that leave lasting emotional scars. Now, when those of us who spoke against the war in Iraq, not necessarily against the war in Afghanistan, but against the war in Iraq, we're talking about this, this is one of the things that we were saying. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're getting into. You're just going to send a whole bunch of troops in there and just assume that it's going to work out. And it's bad enough. It's bad enough that you send these kids in here, but you don't send enough troops to do the job properly. You and your friggin' faith-based military operations. I mean, you just assume Rumsfeld in particular is the main culprit in this, because he's the one who said that you can do it with X amount of troops. When all the military people, the ones with experience, the ones who actually served in the military, were telling you that you needed at least three or four times what you were saying you need, and you wouldn't listen to them. And now we have a situation where instead of a fairly stable country, you have a huge counterinsurgency. Maybe if you had gone in there with 400,000 or 500,000 troops and really helped to rebuild the infrastructure and to help the Iraqi people and to do something for their lives, then it would be a different story. But you go in there and you send the troops out without enough equipment and not enough troops to begin with, and then they go out there and torture Iraqis. They don't do anything to rebuild the infrastructure of the country. You know, they're not helping. And then you just expect them to keep doing it as the situation gets worse and worse, and as the country devolves into civil war. It is not good, people. And as usual, who are the ones that pay for the executives and the bosses' stupidity? It's the soldiers. The bulk of the soldiers, the low-ranking soldiers, are not Republicans. Yeah, you got some hardcore types in there. But mostly, okay, excuse me. Yeah, it's 2 a.m. here, ladies and gentlemen. Mostly, you have the officers who are the ones who are hardcore Republicans. And it's the soldiers who get screwed. Just like when you're on a job and you're told to do something by the by the boss. The boss gets the big bonus, and they get all the money, and you get screwed over. Republicans hate soldiers, ladies and gentlemen. Republicans can't stand them, just like they hate workers. To them, soldiers are expendable. To them, workers are people who help to make them rich. And the soldier dared to ask a question to Rumsfeld about why he's got to go digging in garbage to get the armor that he needs that should have been provided to him. That maybe we would have a lot less than 1,200 plus deaths, almost 1,300 deaths among our military if they'd had the proper armor. And then Rumsfeld gives him a snide answer. And the right wing goes, the right wing press goes crazy on the guy, saying he was set up by a reporter. I don't recall any of these right wing guys going down into Iraq. You know, Al Franken has been to Iraq like three or four times. And he's going there again, apparently. He's going to be doing some, I don't know about live broadcasts, but he's going to be doing some broadcasts from Iraq. That's remarkable. Robin Williams made a trip. I don't know if he did he go to Iraq or Afghanistan. I think he went to Afghanistan to visit with the troops. And he's a hardcore lefty as you're going to find out there. I don't think Michael Moore went out there, but I don't know what the reaction would be if he were to go out there anyway. I know there were troops that finally got to see Fahrenheit 9/11 and were unhappy with a lot of the things that were said there. Not mad at Michael Moore, but unhappy with the truth of what was going on. This is just a perfect example of how Republicans treat soldiers. And now they're going to come back from this war, and they're going to be all fucked up. They're not going to know how to handle themselves. And we're already seeing situations. We've already heard news stories about physical abuse or about guys going a little bonkers. Because, you know, when you get in that type of situation where it's street to street, and especially with what happened in Fallujah, where it's just massive fighting, and you can't tell friend from foe as far as the Iraqi people are concerned, and you know every step you take could be your last step. I mean, that does something to people. I mean, I was in the military. I was never in combat, but I can tell you right now that it does something to people. It changes them forever. And it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. Why am I ending on such a sad note like this? I shouldn't be ending on such a sad note. But, you know, it just pisses me off that these poor kids who joined the National Guard and Reserve maybe not expecting to get called up, but, you know, figuring that if they got called up, it would only be for a certain amount. Now being forced to spend more and more time over there, being in financial hardship and now facing serious mental issues when they get home. That's just, I mean, I can't even get angry about it because getting angry solves nothing. And it frustrates me because you know better. You can see things. And you can see that certain things are just obvious. If you're going to do something, do it fucking right. I mean, if you're that intent on doing it fucking right. Not capable of it. Again, I hate to end this on a note like this, but I'm going to have to close up shop here. I can see by the clock on the wall that we're just about finished. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Again, cupofjoe.blogspot.com and joevec@bellsouth.net. I hope you all have a good time. I'll see you next show on Sunday. Bye.
Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises Incorporated.